Today is Tuesday, October 22nd. We're going to start with page 94, reviewing neuron structure there. Let's see, in class on Thursday of last week, we talked about the dendrites and the cell body. Those dendrites are like satellite dishes. They pick up information from the surrounding environment, and if there's a nerve impulse generated there, it sends the nerve impulse to the cell body. So what major organelle is inside that cell body? Yeah, nucleus is in there. So that is really the hub of activity for your nerves. And that nucleus and that cell body will then propagate or send the nerve impulse down toward the axon. This particular type of axon pictured here is a singular axon leading away from that cell body. What is the connection point between your axon here and the cell body? There's a name for that connection. Okay, there's a connection point right in here. And the name is axon hillock, up there near to the top, under number 2. What are the branch bud-like endings of your axon called? Yeah, those are axon terminals at the other end. Now, if you're talking nerve impulse transmission, the nerve impulses travel in one direction only, always one direction only. That direction is from the dendrites to the cell body. Where next? Axon, good. And then we finally end here with those axon terminals, and they release a chemical called what? Yeah, neurotransmitter. And the one we've been studying is acetylcholine. So that is always, always the direction a nerve impulse travels. Dendrites to cell body, along the axon, and then, of course, we end here with those axon terminals. It will never go the other direction. In fact, if you need to send a nerve impulse in the opposite direction, you've got to have a neuron set up that way. So we never go backwards. We never go from axons to cell body to dendrites. It just does not depolarize in that direction. So we had left off getting ready to discuss myelin sheath down there under number 4. And that is described as a white, fatty, protein-rich covering that wraps around the axons of some of our nerve cells. Not all, but a lot of them do have this myelin sheath wrapping. So in class on Thursday, I had described that myelin sheath like a roll of toilet paper or a roll of paper towels. That myelin sheath wraps around and around and around these axons. Now, the myelin sheath is made up of different cells depending on which nervous system you're in. If you're in the central nervous system, what type of cell makes up a myelin sheath? That's it, yeah, oligodendrocyte in the central nervous system. And the PNS, what cell makes it up? Schwann cells, good. So just keep in mind, the myelin sheath is a white, fatty, protein-rich covering, but it's made by different cells depending on where you're at. Brain and spinal cord is made up of oligodendrocytes, and of course, Schwann cells make up the myelin in our PNS. So if you need a review, those are back on page 93 near the bottom. Okay, the blank there for us is actually for the Schwann cells. That's because they're the myelin sheath cells in the PNS. So I think probably the best way to think of these is as rolls of toilet paper or paper towel. And by the way they wrap around that axon, they create insulation and protection for that axon. There's actually gaps of space between those myelin sheaths or Schwann cells, and that is our next blank. That blank is called a node of Ranvier, that term right here. All right, so our next blank is node of Ranvier. Those are gaps of space between your Schwann cells or oligodendrocytes, just talking about where we're at. The reason the myelin sheath is so important for us is it is a method of speeding up nerve impulse transmission. On the board, I have drawn for you an unmyelinated axon. You'll notice there is no myelin sheath covering that axon. It's a bare naked axon. This pictured here on this PowerPoint is actually a myelin sheath wrapping that axon, and it actually creates an insulation, and it speeds the nerve impulse transmission. What I mean is the only place we have to send the nerve impulse is from one node of Ranvier to the next node, and so forth. So the nerve impulse that travels down a myelinated axon is going to be a heck of a lot faster than a nerve impulse that travels down an unmyelinated axon. So there is an advantage of having a myelin sheath. It helps make the nerve impulse transmission much faster. Because this myelin is actually somewhat white in color, any axon that is myelinated is called what matter? It's white matter, good. And of course, no myelin would make that color what? It'd be gray matter. So in your brain, you have both white matter and gray matter. Your spinal cord has both. And a lot of the axons in our peripheral nerves are actually white matter. So it just depends on how that nerve is constructed. If there is, in fact, myelin, it's going to be white matter, and it makes a much faster nerve impulse transmission. So I thought I'd show you what goes wrong here. If there is damage to that myelin sheath, specifically in the central nervous system, then the nerve impulse does not have the opportunity to jump from node of Ranvier to the next node of Ranvier like it's supposed to be able to. So imagine this power cord here. If I killed the power, unplugged that cord, and then took a pair of scissors and cut all up and down that cord. Let's say then we turn the power back on, we plug that whole cable back in. Would I be safe handling that power cord if it had a bunch of cuts along it? What would you expect to happen to anybody who handled it? You'd get shocked. That is exactly what happens when you have damage to the myelin sheath in the brain and spinal cord. You get little shock messages that are sent like haywire out into odd directions. So in this picture, you can see damage right here to the myelin sheath. Instead of the nerve impulse going to the next node of Ranvier, right there like it's supposed to, the nerve impulse goes haywire and it goes out and it gives shock messages or stimulates those nearby neurons or muscle cells. So people have sensations that, you know, don't necessarily equate to a normal nerve impulse transmission or a muscle contraction. They may have weakness in the destination muscle because the nerve impulse doesn't fully make it to that destination. They may have numb spots. They may have weird things that go on with multiple sclerosis. So this is actually what happens with that underlying disease. There are pieces of the neuron that are damaged, that myelin sheath wrapping in the brain, and we can see that plaques build up in the brain. These white areas here are actually scar tissue. Do you recall what scar tissue is made of? Collagen. And of course, it does not conduct nerve impulses the same way a myelin sheath would. So these plaques that are built up here, this scar tissue, means the nerve impulse in that part of the brain no longer travels like it should. So unfortunately, once we have scar tissue in the brain, we do not know a way to reverse that and to make the scar tissue go away. So it's a progressive chronic disorder that we have to just maintain rather than be able to completely cure. So women tend to be more at risk for developing MS. They think it has perhaps an autoimmune component. What does that mean, autoimmune? Body's attacking itself. So they think there's some element of body's white blood cells attacking this myelin in the brain and causing this damage. They have found that stress management and B12 injections can help to curb the effects of myelin sheath damage, but not completely reverse it. So, you know, people with this kind of disease, it is a progressive disease. It can lead to loss of muscle control. So that is entirely a myelin sheath problem. All right, so that should take you down to the bottom of page 94. Do you have any questions on the terms on that page? So we're going to do a rerun. We are back to kind of where we started. When we talked about muscles, we first started our conversation with excitation because that's how you tell the muscle that you want it to contract. So excitation is kind of like stimulation. We want to stimulate the muscle or another cell and tell it to do something. So we're kind of back to the same old story. We're back to nervous system processes, back to excitation one more time. I just wanted to mention in this picture here, just a reminder, that nerve impulses travel always in one direction only. What is that direction? Good. Dendrites, cell body, axon terminals. Good. Always that direction, never running in reverse. And hey, just for fun, is this myelinated or unmyelinated?
Unmyelinated.
It's unmyelinated. Good. There are no myelin sheaths wrapping around that axon. So nerve impulses are just a tad bit slower when they travel over an unmyelinated axon. Okay. So just wanted to remind you of that. An interesting thing, these little pegs coming off of this cell here, these are new dendrites. And dendrites, of course, receive incoming messages. And when you're studying and learning something new, these dendrites start to form like bumps on the surface of the cell body. And if you've only been exposed to something once, then you may get a little peg stick up. And if you continue studying it, the peg grows a little bit more and a little bit more until it finally makes a connection with another neuron. So you can see some of these have grown quite long. Ultimately, what we're looking for is it to make connection with the neighboring cell. When you have the connection made with a neighboring cell, that's how we can store memories. So that's why studying something once or cramming for it doesn't lead to long-term memory storage. It makes these dendrites kind of stunt their growth if you study it once, cram it, and then never study it again. So the whole reason for us repeating the topics we've been doing for the past week and a half is to make your dendrites grow. Okay, so the more often you can study, the better it's going to stick, because you got to get those dendrites to actually make a connection to the neighboring cell. I don't know if you recall, but on the very first day of class, I showed you this picture, and I said, we'd come back to it. And it's all about memory formation. So that's kind of what we understand about how memories form. They're really, truly not sure how memories stay in your brain, but that is something that we need to discover down the road in terms of scientific research. But we do know those dendrites are part of making connections and making memories in your brain. Okay, so we are going to talk about how you conduct a nerve impulse. And the reason for conducting a nerve impulse may be to tell your muscles to move, or it may be to tell your stomach to make some acid, or it may be to tell your sweat glands to sweat. So the nerve impulse is nothing but an action that tells your body to do something. So what I need to do is set the stage for you with resting potential on page 95. Okay, so top of the page there, resting potential means that we have a polarized neuron. Way back in chapter 2, when we talked about chemistry, we talked about polarity. And I know we talked about equal and unequal sharing. This is kind of along the same lines. In context here, when we're talking about nerve cells, we talk about nerve cells at rest being polarized. And what that means is we have a setup where there's different amounts of ions on either side of your membrane. So this is a cell at rest. All right, so on the outside of our cell, what looks like the most common type of ion? Looks like sodium is most common outside your cell at rest. And inside your nerve cell, what is the most common ion?
Potassium,
good. Just a reminder to keep the symbols straight, right? Na for sodium and K for potassium. You may also recognize the plus symbol there. What does that tell you about both of these ions? Positive charge, good. Are they cations or anions?
Cations,
good. And just to take you back memory lane, what has happened to the ion? Lost or gained electrons?
Lost,
right. So these cations have lost electrons. Okay, so at rest, nerve cells have a lot of sodium outside their membranes, some potassium on the inside. But I should also tell you this, it's just not who is where, it's how much you've got. You have a lot of sodium on the outside of your nerve cells. and you have less potassium on the inside. So I'm going to use our picture down here to kind of keep track of what's going on. Okay, so we're looking at resting potential. This means your nerve cell isn't doing anything. It's just sitting there resting. And at resting potential, what ions are mostly outside?
Sodiums.
Good. So I'm going to put some sodiums outside. They're down here too. Okay, so they're in what we call interstitial fluid. That's that fluid between your cells and tissues. And so we've got a lot of sodium in the fluids outside your cells. Because there's a lot of sodiums on the outside, I'm just going to remind myself of that by putting a bunch of positive charges on the outside of my membrane. All right, so what charges, or what ions rather, are on the inside?
Potassium.
Okay, so there's a few potassiums in here. A couple of sodiums, they sneaked in. We'll put a few in there, but mostly it's potassiums. Oops. Okay, so it's relative amounts. There's a lot of sodiums on the outside. In fact, I'll add a few more just to make the point. There's lots of sodiums on the outside. There are so many on the outside that they outnumber the number of ions on the inside. So because we say we've got a lot of sodium ions on the outside and just a few potassiums on the inside, we say we have a polarized membrane. And that has to do with where you've got the majority. Wherever the most of your ions are, that's your positive charge. Wherever the least number of your ions are, that's where you've got a negative charge. So inside my membrane, I've got less ions in general, and I'm simply going to say that we have a negative charge. So technically, I should say there's more outside, it's more positively charged, inside is less positively charged, but to keep this just a real simple, clean cut process, I simply say I've got more positive out here, I've got less on the inside, it's just going to have a negative charge in comparison. Okay, so to keep this straight, I just came up with SOPPIN, S-O-P-P-I-N. When you're at rest, sodium is outside, the outside is a positively charged environment, potassium's inside, and that's a negatively charged environment. Resting potential. At rest, a neuron is going to have a polarized membrane, and what that means is we have an uneven distribution of charges. The majority of my ions are located on what side of my neuron's membrane? Outside, right. And there's less of them on the inside. So because we have more outside the cell and less inside the cell, we say we have a polarized neuron. Well, we assign what charge to the outside of your neuron? Positive, good. And because there's simply less on the inside, it's negatively charged. Now, ions also are something to look at. At rest, we mostly have sodiums outside. And what mostly do we have inside?
Potassium's
good. Let me tell you something about these also. You know, these sodiums out here must think the good party is going on inside this cell. So it's like they really desperately want to get inside the cell. You see that a few have actually made their way in here. So they think the good times are inside the cell. They may be able to sneak in every now and again. So they can come through that membrane, but they're not really invited unless they come through one of these sodium channels. So if a few sneak in, it's not terribly a big deal. When it becomes a big deal is when the majority of them come inside. Because what happens to your charge if most of your sodiums come in? It'd be positive, right. So wherever the majority is, that's where your positive charge is.
And since the most of them are sitting outside your membrane right now, that's where our positive charge stays. Well, here's the thing. Your neuron says, hey, you stragglers, you shouldn't be in here. So these sodiums that made their way inside your cell, you need to go back out. And we're going to help you get there. So on this picture, you'll notice this purple thing here. It's called a sodium potassium pump. And all these stragglers that snuck into your cell, you're going back out. So this pump has room for 3 sodium ions. And they're going to be escorted back out of the cell. They said you snuck in, but this time you're leaving. So 3 at a time get pumped out of your cell to the exterior. So these pumps sit all along your cell. I'll just put one here. And I'll make a note that they pump out 3 sodiums, but they don't just do that. Any potassiums, and potassiums are precious, right? They gotta come back in. So any potassiums outside also get a free ride back in. Well, it's not necessarily free. You have to pay for this ride. With what? ATP.
Yeah.
So that is your pump. It is called a sodium potassium pump. And so it's constantly working to get these stragglers of sodium out 3 at a time, and any leaked potassiums come back in 2 at a time, okay? So let me make an issue here about the number. The fact that you're moving 3 sodiums out and only 2 potassiums in is actually important. What if I moved 3 sodiums out and 3 potassiums back in? Would I create a negative charge inside and a positive charge outside doing that? So why only move 2 back in, 2 potassiums back in? Exactly. So we don't have the inside become more positive than the outside. Keep in mind, the positive charge here has to do with where you have the majority. So if I put the majority of my ions outside my cell, then I'm going to have a positive charge outside my cell. Okay, so that's why I always move 3 sodiums out only in exchange for 2 potassiums to come in. So I don't want this to have the majority on the inside. It's an elite club only for who? Potassium, yeah. So the elite club inside, just got to keep it
safe. It's like ladies' night.
It's ladies' night, yeah. Ladies in. So wow, that's a good way to put it. Okay, so this is rest. I didn't draw it all the way down, but this whole nerve has got ladies' night, right? Just potassium's inside. There's nasty sodium that's pumped outside. This pump is always running. And so this is kind of what it looks like in this animation here. I promise you it's not that slow. And in order for a muscle to contract, relax, contract again, you have to completely get back to this resting state that you see over here. Yep, so that little red P right there, that's part of the ATP molecule, and it actually pays to operate this pump. So it's mechanizing or making that pump work for us. We talked about rigor mortis. And when people die, their bodies become stiff. That's because this pump fails to work. And wherever those ions are is where they stay. So if they're on the inside, they stay on the inside. And that muscle may stay contracted thanks to sodium staying on the inside. Okay, so I think I've got you down about halfway of the page so far. Let's take a look at number 4 on page 95. You'll notice the overall charge for the interior of the neuron at rest is a negative 70 millivolts. So if it's negative 70, is that the inside charge or the outside charge? That is the inside charge. Okay. It is slight, yeah. Very, very tiny. Okay, so some books will say negative 50, some books will say negative 80. It also depends if they're measuring a muscle or a nerve, but negative somewhere in this 50, 70, 80 range is what we think of as a resting state. And so just to repeat the resting state, we have most of our sodiums located on the outer surface of our cells. Our potassiums are inside our cells. And where is the negative charge? Inside your cell or outside your cell?
Inside,
good. And why do we have a positive charge outside our cells?
There's just more ions
there, good. And at rest, what type of ion is outside? Sodium, good. What type of mechanism keeps the peace, keeps our sodium moving from the inside to out and our potassiums moving in? Good, that pump, that sodium-potassium pump is always working to maintain a maintain the peace, so to speak, maintain that resting state. Okay, so we kind of talked about this before, but in no detail like this. What we did talk about is the next step, which we're heading toward. Before we go there, do you have any questions about how to maintain a resting state?
And this is the cell?
This is a neuron, yeah. This whole thing is our neuron. This could very well be a muscle cell. So any cell that needs to maintain rest is going to have a similar setup to this one. How about other questions? Okay. I left you a summary at the bottom of the page. That summary is going to help us as we work through the next few pages. What we've just created in number 5 there is called an electrochemical gradient. And that gradient allows for us to maintain a resting state. Electro means electrical, like charges. So we've got a negative charge inside our cell, positive outside. And the chemical portion goes toward our ions. What ions are inside at rest? Potassium, right? And outside is mostly sodium. So we've got a charge gradient and we have a chemical gradient. So in combination, it is called an electrochemical gradient. You so far so good. You know the story from here. So along comes a neurotransmitter, and if it's a muscle cell, it might be something like acetylcholine. Other neurotransmitters you may have heard of are dopamine, serotonin, GABA. There's a whole bunch of them you may have talked about if you've taken a psych class. Let's say that we have a nerve impulse that travels down our axon terminal. That nerve impulse will excite that axon terminal. And what types of channels on that axon terminal now open?
Calcium.
Good. So by the excitement arriving in that axon terminal, calcium, of course, enters into the axon terminal. And that allows for... What's next? Good. Acetylcholine to be a release. So this could be any neurotransmitter. Acetylcholine is just one type. So some neurotransmitter, like acetylcholine, is released, and it's now in the synaptic cleft. What happens next to your acetylcholine or neurotransmitters?
Binds.
Good. So I'm going to put ACH right there on that channel. And what type of channel was that?
Sodium
channel. So when sodium binds, or whether when acetylcholine binds that sodium channel, those sodium channels will now open, and what happens next? Sodium rushes in. And we said in our last conversation, that kind of excitement inside your cell. Well, there has to be enough sodium rush in. So let's say that we have a lot of sodium start rushing in. I'm going to make it really crowded in there. Okay, so let's go back to the ladies' night. Okay, let's say it's ladies' night until 11 o'clock. And at 11 o'clock, doors are open, anybody and everybody can come in. And this is a great place to be, so everybody wants to be here. And at 11 o'clock, doors open, sodium rushes in. Look at the crowd you now have inside. So you have this big party inside yourself. In fact, it is very crowded there, so crowded that the charge becomes what?
Positive.
Good. Now, if you just had a dime bar that nobody was interested in coming to, you know, the doors open at 11 and everybody could come in, trickle might not be enough to really get this party started. So you can't have just a few sodiums rush in. You've got to have a big amount of sodiums rush in order to change this environment here to a positive charge. So why do I say when the sodiums rush in that I now have a positive environment on the inside of my cell? There's more in there, right? So the more ions you put inside, the more likely it is I can create a positive charge. So if I have just a few hanging out outside, maybe they just didn't get in, that's the lesser amount of ions. So what charge should be outside now?
Negative.
Good. Okay. There's not enough board space. I'm just going to abbreviate, and I'm going to say resting potential is negative 70 millivolts. That's where we start, right? All right, so DP is my abbreviation for depolarization. That's what we're doing here by allowing these sodiums to rush in. We're changing the polarized state inside from a negative charge to a positive charge. So I mentioned to you that if we open these sodium channels and we just have a few sodiums trickle in, who's always working to send them back out? Yeah, that pump's always working. So if you just open the doors and a few come in, then you may have a depolarization event, but you may not have had enough to create a full-blown action potential. So you could have negative 60 millivolts with just a few sodiums flowing in. Okay, but when you hit critical mass for the party to get started, you've hit what's called threshold. And so threshold, I believe I've got written there on your sheet, about F, number four, yeah. Threshold is what value? Negative 55. So open the sodium channels, just a few flooding in, you may depolarize slightly to negative 60. Nothing's going to happen. You're not going to conduct the nerve impulse at negative 60. But if you have enough sodiums flood in to reach negative 55, you've now reached threshold. And that means you are going to conduct the nerve impulse. It is going forward. There is no question about it. So that means you have to have just enough sodiums flood in that this sodium potassium pump can't keep up with flushing them back out, pumping those three back out for those two potassiums coming in. Well, this now turns on depolarization until we reach an action potential. So here's what happens. You had acetylcholine bind to one of your sodium channels. Some sodium's flooded in. Maybe acetylcholine bound a neighboring channel. That one opened, sodium flooded in. Well, if you hit threshold, that means that the party has started. That means this is an all or none, you're going for a nerve impulse transmission. So guess what these neighboring sodium channels do with even no acetylcholine sitting there? They open. So they say, hey, you hit threshold, party started. You got the critical number in here. Party's going whether or not you like it. So all of these down the way here now begin to open up. And what happens to the environment on the inside? Turns positive. Yep, so here we go.
down the way here, maybe even more. And it's just like wildfire. That nerve impulse is so exciting that it causes those sodium channels down the way to begin opening and sodium to rush in. Okay? So these channels here that bounds these acetylcholine molecules are called ligand-gated channels. Something has to bind to them to open them up. These are called voltage-gated channels. All you have to do is get excited around them, and they open up. And so that's what happens, is these are all excited, they open, and sodium rushes in. Let's do it from the top. Okay, at rest, what is the charge inside your muscle or nerve cell?
-70.
Good. What ions are inside your cell at rest? Potassiums. And outside?
Sodiums.
And the charge, the positive and negative charge, depends on what? Where the sodium is. Yeah, where the majority is. So outside, if you're positively charged, that's where the majority of your ions are. Negative inside means there's just less in there, right? Okay, so this polarization that we have set up, or gradient that we have set up, is due to the fact that more sodiums are outside and potassiums, there's less of them here on the inside. What mechanism or pump maintains this resting state? Good. How many sodiums does it move outside your cell? So it takes 3 from the inside, pumps them out. And if there's any potassiums hanging out outside your cell, how many are moved back in?
2.
And so the fact that we have a 3-for-2 exchange means that we will always have more ions outside and less ions inside. Well, along comes a nerve impulse, comes down axon terminal. We open up calcium channels, and that allows us to release vesicles full of neurotransmitter. We can use ACH for the conversation again. When ACH binds a sodium channel, what happens next? Sodium floods inside. The fact that sodium comes in means that we no longer at a resting state. We're now at a depolarized state. That means we're becoming unstable. We're becoming, you know, a little more positive than we used to be. So what is the critical number for turning this little bit of depolarization into a full-blown nerve impulse? -55, good. And that's called?
Threshold,
good. So down the way, these other sodium channels are so excited that we've hit threshold, they too will open, good. And what now floods into their sodium channels? Even more sodium. So the more sodium you have flood in, the more positive it makes the inside of your nerve cell. In fact, at the height of action potential, what should be the charge on the inside? Yeah, about positive 30. So, yeah, this is going from negative all the way to the positive side. And once you hit threshold, we call this all or none. This means that you're going for it. There is no turning back. There is no such thing as doing things halfway. So you either have an action potential or you don't. And if you want to have a stronger result, you just recruit more nerves to send the same message all at once. Okay, so it may be what we perceive as being weak, but it's only weak because we may have activated just one set of nerves to do the job. All right, so the action potential flows down the length of this cell, and it will eventually end up down here in the axon terminal, which we know is the same story we've been through before. Let me hit a couple of words there for you. And number 4A, graded potential, depolarization, hyperpolarization. Let's hit those words. Okay, so when we've got a resting state and we have sodiums rush in, we say that is depolarizing the inside of our cells. If you reach threshold, depolarization will lead all or none to what? Okay, so if you've got depolarization and sodium's rushing in and you reach threshold, which is -55, you're guaranteed an action potential, right? Okay, so let's say that we're somewhere around -65, -60, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Where's the excitement right now? It's right around here, right? Okay, so if I'm at negative 60 or negative 65, what have I not yet met?
Threshold.
And if I want to conduct this excitement down the way, what do I have to hit? I gotta hit threshold, I gotta hit negative 55. And what ions must be in my cell to reach threshold?
Sodium.
Gotta have more sodiums. So if these sodium channels, a few of them open thanks to acetylcholine, and you're flirting around negative 60, negative 65, we're gonna say you're graded potential. You are somewhat depolarized just right here, but you may not have reached full-blown threshold at negative 55, and you haven't turned this thing on into a block party, so to speak. So let me put it to you this way. If you have a really fun neighborhood to live in, if you have a house party going on and it's just you and your house having a house party, you're at a graded potential. But if the excitement is so much fun that neighbor after neighbor after neighbor now starts having a party, you've now turned on your threshold, and your graded potential turns into what? Turns into action potential. So if you're having a party of one at home, you're a graded potential. If you have others join your excitement, that means you must have met threshold and you've got your action potential. Same thing happens in a football stadium. You ever done a wave at a football game? So if you and a few friends start throwing your hands up in the air for the wave, graded potential. You can sit there all day and do this, right? People look at you and think, well, poor them, nobody's helping them, right? But as soon as you get a couple people helping you and it starts to spread, action potential, right? So graded potential is just a localized area of depolarization. It may or may not spread. If it does spread, then that means you must have met what critical number? Negative 55. You've got to have hit threshold for this to travel and become a full-blown action potential. So this number here must happen for you to keep on going down this way, okay? So if you never hit threshold, you never do anything. It's just you sputter out, sit at the stoplight, okay? So that's graded potential. It's just a localized set of depolarized a portion of your neuron. Nothing's going to happen unless you hit threshold.
But once you hit threshold, you're guaranteed.
Exactly. Yeah, once you hit it, then you're good to go. Let me also talk with you about letter B. That is 4B on page 96. All right. So sometimes when we're doing an action potential, it gets really crowded inside your cell. How do you restore the resting state? That can start it, yeah, that can start it. And then you've got to rely on this pump too, right? Okay, so that's working all the time in the background. But if we're trying to get rid of this crowd inside of our cell, you know, sometimes these potassiums say, hey, I was in here first and we were hanging out, it was great. And all of a sudden we got overtaken by this flood of sodiums. So these potassiums may say, as this action potential is progressing, let me say we're out of here. This place is way too crowded. So there are channels, I'll make it look a little different there. There are channels all along here just for potassium. So at the height of the action potential, when it gets really crowded in here, these potassiums may say, let's ditch this place and get out of here, and they may start leaking out. Okay, so when the potassium start to leak out, they may go in a hurry. And so if they go in a hurry and they leave in mass, and a lot of them go on the outside of your cell, what just happened to your charge inside your cell? Hyperpolarization. It just went negative. Okay, and so if you've got potassiums leaking out, potassiums can leave so suddenly and so fast in a big group together that they turn this place negative on the inside. Since the majority of them flood to the outside, what happens to the charge out there?
Positive.
Turns positive, yeah. So keep in mind, the positive charge is where the crowd goes, the negative charge is where you only have a few. So at the height of the action potential, as it floods past, these slow opening potassium channels may allow for just enough of them to leave to flip your charge back to negative on the inside. And that is a hyperpolarization state.
Are those the potassium pumps going back in?
Yes. Yep. So if they get out there, the pump says, okay, two at a time, here y'all come. So in fact, if you turn into a hyperpolarized state, you may not just go back to negative 70. You may go so negative that you're beyond negative 70. Maybe you've gone to negative 90, negative 100, negative 110, and so forth. Point is, you went really, really negative. Means that the inside charge is what? Negative. Good. So we're going to look at negative 70, somewhere in that neighborhood. What is the most common ion inside your cell at rest? Good. And outside your cell at rest? Sodium. Good. So that's what we think of in a resting state. Potassium's inside, sodium's outside, negative 70 millivolts. Along comes a stimulus. That stimulus may come in the form of acetylcholine. It is released from the axon terminals of a neighboring cell. What happens to acetylcholine when it's present in your synaptic cleft? Yeah, it binds to sodium channels, and sodium channels will open. And so when sodium starts to flood in, what happens to the charge inside the cell?
Does it become positive?
Becomes more positive, right. So we go from negative 70 to negative 60 to negative 55, and bam, you just hit
threshold.
What is guaranteed to happen now?
Action
potential. Anything up to this point was a graded potential. Okay, so up until negative 55, you were dealing with a graded potential. It may or may not have gone anywhere. It just depends if you hit threshold. At threshold, this excitement now opens up what types of channels? Sodium channels, right. So these sodium channels are excited down the way, and sodium begins to rush into your cell.
And those are called voltage gating?
They're voltage
gating. They don't need the neurotransmitter.
That's right. The only ones that need a neurotransmitter are the lighter gated ones. These voltage gated ones, they just go along with the crowd, and when it's excited,
you hit the threshold.
You hit the threshold. Yes, so they boom, they open. All right, so once we start having a flood of sodium come in, we're beyond threshold. We're now working with a nerve impulse. And what's another name for that nerve impulse? Action potential, right. So this action potential floods down the length of your cell. It always flows toward those axon terminals. And of course, these potassiums say, boy, it's getting a bit crowded in here. So what type of channel opens to let them out? Potassium channel opens. If enough flood out, they can turn your environment very quickly from positive into what?
Negative.
To a negative. And we're not just talking negative 70, we're talking more than negative 70. Hyperpolarization may take you further than or more negative than the resting state. That's kind of where we've gotten so far. How do you have, where should I go back and repeat for you or further explain? It's just the potassium channels are slow to open, and when they do, a whole bunch can go. Yeah. How about other questions so far? We've got a mess to clean up, and so if you want to go back to the resting state is negative charge inside, positive outside, potassium inside, sodium outside. So we're kind of heading in that direction by letting our potassiums flood out. the leaving of the potassiums will make our interior charge turn white. Yeah, if you let the potassiums flood out, you can make the inside get more negative. Okay, so if you think about resting state, potassium should not be outside. Where should they be?
Inside.
All right, so how do I get them back inside? Pump them. Two at a time, come back inside. And all these sodiums that thought they were having a party inside, gotta leave. So you got the negative charge back by having a flood of potassiums leave really quickly. So we got the negative charge back. So that's part of the problem that we have now fixed. But the other thing is we've created a reverse. We need all these potassiums out here to come back in and all these sodiums inside to be pumped back out. You are not at resting state until the pump is done. And so the pump has to do its work to get you back into the resting state. As long as this pump is working, you are repolarizing.
So does like the pump speed up more during repolarization, or should it stay hot?
There's probably more that are activated. Imagine at rest, it's probably less of them, but yeah, you've got to have all of them, all hands on deck to get them pumped back at that repolarization stage. Okay, so repolarization is actually on page 97. There's a term there I'd like to draw your attention to. Actually, it's at the bottom of page 97. 97 bullet point down there, very bottom. Refractory period. As long as that pump is having to clean up this mess and pump out three sodiums back into potassiums, you're repolarizing, but more specifically, you're in what's called the refractory period. This nerve cannot fire another impulse until the refractory period is done. Okay, so it's kind of a recharge state. Refractory period means that we're resetting that resting state. Cannot send another nerve impulse during that time period. Most of your day-to-day activities, you never notice a refractory period. You know, if you've overused a muscle, for instance, and you are, you know, maybe you've sweated and lost a lot of ions, you may notice that there's a longer refractory period to reset those ions. But nonetheless, no nerve impulse can be transmitted during that refractory state. The reason is, where's most of your sodium still hanging out? The wrong side, right. So it's still inside, it needs to be pumped out, and those potassiums need to get back in. So repolarization depends on the rate of your sodium-potassium pumps. So if you know somebody who's got fast motor skills, you know, maybe they're a fast sprinter, maybe they were good at playing things like dodgeball, they could always get out of the way really quick, they've got fast sodium-potassium pumps. So the faster your pumps, the faster you can reset and move again. That sounds like an advantage for living, right? Because you know, if something's after you to eat you, you don't want to be the slow one. You're the one that's left behind and eaten. It pays to have faster pumps for faster movement. Okay, the story is actually the same. The whole synaptic cleft and that whole process over on page 98 is actually, we have been there, done that. So I'll let you read about the synapse at the top of the page. And I do want to mention the terms at the bottom of the page, EPSP and IPSP. That's probably not the best picture. Let's get a different one to look at. Okay. Down at the very bottom of page 98, you'll notice the term EPSP under number 9 and IPSP down there. So you'll notice the E stands for excitement and the I stands for inhibitory. So let's talk about that. If you want to excite a muscle and promote depolarization, what types of channels should you open? Open up sodium. Because if you let sodium in, you've got a better chance of getting threshold and a full-blown action potential. So EPSPs are types of messages sent to cells that open up sodium channels.
however, you want a muscle or a nerve cell to stay at rest, you send the message of an IPSP, inhibitory postsynaptic potential. I is the only thing that's important here, because with an IPSP, you're not depolarizing the cell. What are you actually doing? Yeah, repolarizing or hyperpolarizing, so you're making it more negative on the inside during an IPSP. So let me explain where this plays into real life. If you've ever gone for a really big meal, you know how you feel after a really big meal, right? You want to sleep? Where's the blood going when you've had a meal?
Stomach,
yeah. So these digestive organs get that blood, and you feel sleepy because your brain's not getting as much blood. And you're into what's this rest and digest mode with parasympathetic nervous system response. Well, if you decide, after about 30 minutes or so, that I'd like to take a swim, and you get into the deep end of a pool, and you're just swimming about, now where's the blood got to go? Arms and legs. Okay, so let's play this out using EPSPs. When you've eaten a big meal, what muscles are given excitement orders? Your stomach, your digestive orders. And during a big meal, where have you sent rest orders?
All the rest.
All the rest, yeah. The rest of your muscles are told, stay still, stay at rest. They're sent hyperpolarization messages. Worst time ever to have a meeting, right? Right after lunch, everybody's eaten, everybody's sleepy, okay? So reverse it. If you are now moving, you're forcing blood to go to your muscles. Where are you now sending rest messages?
Back to the digestive
tract. Back to the digestive tract, yeah. So your body plays off where to send the most energy and the most blood by managing excitement orders to some cells and rest orders to other cells. What is an excitement order? What kind of PSP is that? It's an E. Yeah, it's an EPSP. If you want the cell to stay at rest, what is that message? IPSP. Which one of those will hyperpolarize a cell? IPSP. And that opens what types of ion channels? Potassiums. Yeah, let's potassiums leak. But if you want to excite the cell, you send a message to open what kind of channels? Sodium, yeah, EPSP opens sodium channels. So that makes pretty good sense when you think about whether or not you want to excite a cell or make a cell stay just sitting there at rest. Okay, I know we've covered a lot. I do want to mention 99, 100, and 101 as a review for you. And I'd like for you to work on that between now and Thursday so I know where to target when we hit Thursday. And I have a couple of videos to show you. On YouTube, if you search for nerve impulse transmission, there's a lot of good stuff out there. Something's not hooked up here. Okay, I guess I'll be your narrator. Important to note that the nerve impulse always travels dendrites to cell body, axon terminals. It always travels in that direction, and what we've been doing is an unmyelinated axon as compared there to a myelinated axon. Those nerve impulses are going to be faster down a myelinated axon. All right, so notice the sodium potassium pump. There you go with three sodiums out and two potassiums in. What powers the movement of that pump?
ATP.
Good. So that pump helps us to maintain a resting state. you'll notice the negative charges here inside your cell. Outside your cell, you've got those positive charges. And what we're trying to do is make sure that the main type of ion inside is our potassium. And outside your cell, what type of ion is common out there? Sodium, good. So at rest, we're looking at about a negative 70 millivolt charge inside our cell. And then all of a sudden, you'll notice these sodium channels opening. There must have been a stimulus that opened up that sodium channel. And those sodiums rushed into that cell. All right, so let's go back. They're going to go through a nerve impulse traveling from our dendrites to the cell body. All right, so there goes an action potential or nerve impulse down the length of that axon. And that action potential, that excitement, opens up these voltage-gated sodium channels. And in order for us to reach a full-blown action potential, we must have enough sodiums flood in to reach what critical value?
Threshold.
Good, negative 55. You'll notice these potassium channels here in purple did open up. They will flood out those potassiums. That restores the charge on your inside back to a negative charge. In fact, it may even go beyond negative 70. We call that setup what?
Hyperpolarization.
Hyperpolarization, good. So that sets us up with a resting state, but our ions are in the wrong location. And you saw the pump there restoring that proper location of sodiums and potassiums.
Does an action potential have to happen at the axon
pellets,
or it can happen anywhere along the axon?
It normally acts at somewhere around the dendrites or the cell body. But it's my understanding it can happen further down, like the axon hillock. You can even have a mechanical bump against the nerve and conduct the action potential that way, just from a mechanical disturbance. And so that can be along the axon. This should be a familiar story. There's that axon terminal. Those neurotransmitters will, of course, come into that synaptic cleft. What type of channel will they bind? Yeah, and so when they bind that sodium channel, they open, and of course that can now depolarize that neighboring cell. And this just relays that nerve impulse on to the next cell until we get to our final destination. All right, so maybe we'll have sound. I'll try to see if I can get the sound to work for us on Thursday, but this is all we're doing Thursday. We're just going to go back and repeat. And anything y'all need to hear again for the test on Tuesday, we'll